This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are covering Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, chapters 7 and 8, the Ministry of Magic, and the Hearing. In these chapters, we are exposed to the main governmental building of the magical government.
So, you know, I know I'm like kind of all over the place with pretty much everything in my life, but I've seen the Fantastic Beasts and I know they go to the ministry in one of those movies, but I didn't realize it like showed up earlier. I mean, I knew kind of like it was talked about, but actually kind of, you know, the different floors and stuff, I thought that was kind of interesting. So
yeah, although in Fantastic Beasts it basically shows the American equivalent, not the British one, if I
remember. Oh, okay.
If I
probably
remember. Yeah, because it's like it's MACUSA, the Magical Congress of okay. The United States of America. But anyway, and then in chapter 8 we get a whole kangaroo court.
Oh my god,
Budget's not nice.
No, he's not. And I know one of the characters we meet here is I think people consider them one of the most evil characters in Harry Potter. So
indeed. So let us jump right into it with chapter 7, the Ministry of Magic. And Harry has to awake at 5:30.
Ugh.
And, that sucks.
It's like me. I get up at like 5:30. It's the worst.
Why?
It's my job right now. It's, I got to start real early, so it's a pain. I'm a central time person working on East Coast time. So
So there's partly time zone. That's shitty. Yeah. So Harry doesn't even bother waking up Ron. He just like tiptoes downstairs. And who's at the table? Mr. and Mrs. Weasley, Sirius, Lupin, and Tonks.
Yeah, Mrs. Weasley sees them and immediately like it does the maternal thing and starts making breakfast for everybody to kind of get them ready to go to the ministry to deal with the Harry's trial, basically.
Yeah, which have you ever had to deal with the dread of going to court?
You know, thankfully, I did get jury duty and then I was not called. It got canceled. So no. And apparently I'm not going to get called for a little while. But no, not yet. Thankfully. Now I have dealt with lawyers and I can't say anything more. But yes.
Yeah, it's so sad because even though you know you're morally right, the fact that there isn't enough either not enough evidence or enough laws in place that this is just a straightforward, yeah, of course you're right. Get the other motherfucker.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, this trial is kind of funky too. And you know, I think again, Harry is he's not an adult, you know. He's dealing with going to this trial, which is just kind of, it's all very strange. I think it's very mature for a young person to have to deal with. But I'm sure, I know young people deal with the court system, so don't like come for me, anybody.
Yeah, and would you be able to eat in this situation?
Probably barely. If I don't know, man, I probably not. Probably
I think
not.
I think the only thing I could keep down would be like a glass of orange juice and that's it.
Maybe some saltines or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So we've got everyone saying, you know, sure, you'll be cleared. Like, you know, the law's on your side. So I guess it's just, you know, obviously you've already read the next chapter. But go back to when you were reading just this part. Did you feel that Harry's trepidation was founded or unfounded? Because, again, there is, you know, the basic, of course you have the right to defend yourself if something's gonna kill you, you right. know? And, you know, Harry doesn't seem at all, you know, confident in that conviction. And is that lack of confidence sound or unsound? Like, what were you thinking? Or excessive, I mean, or whatever?
I think that, you know, I self-doubt and kind of lack of confidence, you know, he did the right thing. I mean, he did the thing that he could do in a very odd situation. So I could kind of empathize with his trepidation. This is a system he's unfamiliar with. This is like, you know, he's just kind of trying to survive in this. So, I mean, he sure is cocky a lot, but in this situation, you know, he's thinking about all these things that could be taken from him, which are his mm-hmm. friends, his school. He could, you know, he's probably in the back of his mind thinking, oh my God, I'm going to go spend the rest of my life at Privet Drive. And so I get it. I mean, I don't.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, you know, we'll see later, you know, what Fudge's agenda really is and the shitty underhanded things he's willing to do to get what he wants. But from Harry's position in terms of, again, he hasn't been following the Daily Prophet religiously the way Hermione has. So it's only brand new information to him how much the ministry has been trying to discredit him. So I'm just saying, like, from his ignorance, you know, I think if I were in that level of ignorance, I probably would be like, what the hell is this? Of course I have every right to do magic to save my own life. What is this bullshit?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's just maybe an inherently me thing that I'm like, I know I did this right, but then maybe I didn't. I don't know. I could probably talk further into that, but I get it. I mean, I can empathize with Harry here.
Yeah. And Tonks is there, and she clearly has been up all night doing what? We have no idea.
No, we don't.
No.
No good.
And she, we have no idea whether this was order related or not, but she's just like, I cannot do night duty. I'm too tired. And Mr. Weasley offers to finish it for her or to substitute for her. Which just the word substitute got me thinking about all those articles I'm seeing about the teaching crisis and some states calling in the National Guard, like literally anyone who is over 18, like just getting an adult body in the classroom.
I am very close relationship with a teacher. My mother is a teacher, so I won't share some of the horror stories, but she filled me in this weekend, and my God.
And it wasn't pretty?
Oh, God. No, just, you know, have some patience with teachers right now, because they're having to do everything, basically, at those schools.
Again, my mother was also a teacher, and ended up being, you know, volunteering to retire, you know, earlier with a settlement just to keep scandal from breaking out, and because they knew she was right. She was right.
Oh, man. All right. Sounds like a juicy story there.
Yeah, to be continued. But so the hearing's on my floor in Amelia Bones's office. She's head of the Department of Magical Law Enforcement, and she's the one who'll be questioning you. And Tonks is like, yeah, she's really nice. She's fair. She'll hear you out. And I think it's just Rich that's, of all people, Sirius is the one saying, don't lose your temper.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no kidding. I'm serious. He's, don't lose your temper. Come on,
man. Who is, like, losing his temper as in ripping out the fat lady's portrait because she won't let him in to get the stupid rat.
Right, right. Yeah, I thought that was a little surprising as well. Like, come on, pot kettle there. Situation. Yeah,
do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, just stick to the facts. And what is it? Mrs. Weasley was attacking his hair with a wet comb. Doesn't it ever lie flat? Nope. And Harry's like, nope.
That was like a little, like, I don't know why, for the way that was worded kind of like stressed me out. He was like something like wet on the back of his neck. I was like, oh my God. My immediate thought was like, is there a dog there that I don't know about? Like, is.
Well, there is, but he's in human form at the moment. Right.
I was going to say, did Sirius like start licking the back of his head? That's a little weird, but no.
Yep. And so Mr. Weasley's like, you know, we'll just head in now and you can wait in my office. It's better than lolling about, you know, around here. And so they all like hug him and wish him good luck. And then they are off down the streets of London.
Man, what a lovely day for Mr. Weasley, because Harry gets to kind of help him through all these muggle things like tickets and money and stuff like that. And you just know, like, he's just eating it up.
Yeah, he's like a kid in the candy shop because you know, Mr. Weasley usually operates to work, but the very specific nature of what Harry is being charged with, it's like, we should use as least magic as possible. So we're just gonna take the underground and use the visitor's entrance.
You know, that's fine. I kind of was a little confused by that because, I mean, I understand like Harry, you know, but when he's under the kind of like protection or whatever of an adult, I was like, well, I guess they're just being extra careful. I don't know.
Again, just, well, I think Mr. Weasley, you know, unlike Harry, who's been kept in the dark again for a month, which Harry was screaming about a few chapters ago, I think Arthur is very aware of how dirty Fudge is willing to play in this situation.
Mm. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
And so doesn't want to give any more ammunition to Fudge or anyone else.
That makes good sense.
Mm-hmm. And so they get off at the station, the very heart of London. You know, I wish Harry the writer had given us more description of like actual sites in London. So maybe Harry did and his editor was like, you can't tell the muggles where the actual entrance is. You can't do that. So he looked, maybe he was forced to keep it vague. For obvious reasons.
Okay, that answers my question because I thought, did I miss something? We seem to have gone from A to B rather quickly, but.
Mm-hmm. So basically, the visitor's entrance to the Ministry of Magic is a old school telephone box.
How very Doctor Who.
I've never been into Doctor Who, but I do know that the telephone box is a big symbol of that franchise.
Yep, it's bigger on the inside. Yep, I'm
And if you take note of the dial, the numbers that Mr. Weasley dials, 62442, those, if you correspond them with the typical ABC for numbers on a telephone, it spells magic.
Oh, that's cute. I didn't know that.
And that is a very popular Harry Potter trivia question. So don't even think of ever throwing that one at me. I will, you know, like, I invent my own trivia questions. Do not insult me with any, you know, secondhand crap on the internet.
There you go. There you go.
So he dials magic and it basically is a sort of like elevator. But first there's the like, you know, announcer, like, please state your business.
Right. And then, you know, what does it say? Mr. Weasley was uncertain whether he should talk into the receiver or not. I don't know. I was like, what is going on here? He's kind of confused. But he picked up a badge. It was a silver square badge with Harry Potter disciplinary hearing on it. Like, that's a little intense, I thought, to wear a badge with that. But
it's like the Scarlet Letter.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Yes. And then, so, yep, they shuddered. It sinks into the ground. And the Ministry of Magic wishes you a pleasant day, said the woman's voice. So, what did you think about the whole description of the Ministry of Magic's atrium?
Peacock blue is beautiful, so I really appreciated that. I liked that color and color description. I really did, like, this whole, the visualization of this in the floors and all of this. I don't know. I thought it was kind of fun in creating glittering jets of water flying from the ends of water. I don't know. It was pretty
beautiful. Have any Did you have any specific thoughts about the statue that's at the fountain?
No, not really, but I am sure I missed something.
Well, it's just a lot of people point to this because it comprises of a statues of a wizard, a witch, a centaur, a goblin, and a house elf, and that the goblin, house elf, and centaur are all staring adoringly at the witch and wizard. So emphasizing this, again, this human-centric magical world, and
what you couldn't see was me roll my eyes. Amy saw it, but I was like, good Lord. Okay.
So it's definitely would be in our current climate of, you know, the way people are demanding certain like Civil War-esque statues be removed. This is definitely a statue that would be asked to be removed.
Yeah, it's a little I wouldn't design a sculpture like that. That is what I'll say. So it's a little weird.
And just the fact that centaur, goblin, and house elf are happy looking at them. We're so happy. We're subjected. We're suppressed by our human overlords.
It's gross. I'm not about to get into a whole thing. I was like, I was going to get into a whole thing about animals, but I'm not going there. So we will carry on. But.
Yeah. And there's like a little... sign at the fountain that says all proceeds for the Foundation of Magical Brethren will be given to St. Munkle's Hospital for magical maladies and injuries.
How lovely.
Yep. Yeah. Cupcake is scratching under the door wanting to get in, but she cannot come in because she doesn't want to stay and sit quietly. Yep. And so Harry follows Mr. Weasley to his office. Well, first they have to stop at the security desk and present his wand and all of that stuff. And then was it like, all right, Arthur, said the wizard, nodding to Mr. Weasley. What have you got there, Bob? We're not sure. We thought it was just a bog standard chicken until it started breathing fire.
This was pretty funny that somebody may have like crossbred a chicken. I don't know, a chicken and a dragon. Like, who the hell knows? But I thought this was kind of funny.
Yeah, we've got level 7, Department of Magical Games and Sports, level 6, Department of Magical Transport, level 5, Department of International Magical Cooperation, level 4, Department of Regulations and Control of Magical Creatures, level 3, Department of Magical Accidents and Catastrophes, level 2, Department of Magical Law Enforcement, including the Improper Use of Magic Office or Headquarters and Wizengamot Administration services. And so this is where Arthur works.
That's too bad. I would like to work on the magical creatures floor personally, but
yes. Although again, just the whole name, Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical. Yeah, incorporating beast being and spiritual divisions, goblin liaison office. So what does that say about how they view goblins?
Yeah, not too kindly, because then it followed by in the Pest Advisory Bureau. So they really lump a lot of things together.
Yeah, if they wanted to be at least put on a veneer of treating goblins equal, Goblin Liaison Office should be in like, you know, Department of International Magical Cooperation.
Yeah, right. Yeah, poor goblins.
Yep. So as they're walking through the floor, Harry gets a glimpse at the Auror office. And he sees Kingsley.
I don't know who Kingsley is. I'm sorry.
Kingsley Shacklebolt, the black wizard that's part of the Order.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Who was in the Privet Drive. Okay.
Yeah, who was in the Privet Drive. And, you know, Arthur and Kingsley basically have to pretend that they don't know each other that well.
Yeah, it's this very strange conversation, which is very much, you know, and Harry's trying to say hi.
And Harry has no cool. He doesn't realize that, okay, there's no situation where I would know Kingsley other than this secret society that Dumbledore founded. And so,
right.
And so Arthur has to stomp on his foot.
Right. So, and kind of tell him to shut up. And then he's like giving him these coded messages, obviously. Yeah.
And then Mr. Weasley's like whispering, like, if you can get away before 7, Molly's making meatballs.
Oh my goodness. I'm always cooking, Miss Molly.
Yes. And so, and then we finally get to Mr. Weasley's dingy office. It seemed to be slightly smaller than a broom cupboard. It just reflects our own world that the services that are the most essential for society to keep running are paid the least and are not given the social capital or economic capital that they deserve, in showing how we treat teachers and
healthcare workers,
people in, you know, customer service, like oh my god, poor flight attendants. I was making a comment like, there needs to be a new drinking game for every time an article in my newsfeed is about someone losing their shit on an airplane. Yeah, because there was one. Basically, the most ridiculous one I've seen was, I think, a guy from like a flight from Ireland to New York got so pissed off that he was asked to wear a mask, threw a can, like a soda at someone, pulled down his pants and exposed his buttocks. So basically he mooned them.
Oh my god, grow up, man. Like, that probably wasn't a kid that did that. So that
he was 29.
Oh, good lord. Like, just wear a damn, I don't know. Yeah. Flying is, you know, the airport is not fun for a number of reasons, but we've just added another reason to make it less fun. So
all of those types of workers that are necessary, you know, we just treat them at the bottom rung. And it's like, you know, which whether subconscious or not, I think that's deliberate, because we don't want to send the message that you are important, because if you all together quit, we would be screwed.
Yeah. Yeah. We're kind of seeing some of the repercussions of that. And, you know, essential workers should be treated and paid as such, but whatever. I don't get to make the rules. I just
like literally. So, today my husband and I, were just sick of being at home. So we went to a coffee shop to just do our work. And I had a delicious lavender latte, but I almost had to wait 15 minutes because the barista wasn't like there, like had was their next barista wasn't coming in for 15 minutes, you know, and also the coffee shop closed at 3.
Yeah. I mean, it's everybody. I don't know. It's hard right now with everybody's having, it's just hard.
Yeah. Again, I'm all for waiting 15 minutes, for my lavender latte for the sake of general social upheaval for positive change. I can deal with waiting 15 minutes for my goddamn lavender latte. And it was delicious because, you know, lavender, not every coffee shop has that flavor. So when they do, I am pleasantly surprised.
Just makes me think of the book Horrid with the rose lattes.
Yes, with the rose and lavender lattes. Yes. Anyway. So then we get a little peek into what Arthur does, and so there's an issue of a regurgitating toilet.
How gross. Like, I know that sometimes there with the bathroom humor, I was like, all right, let's not do that. But yeah, here we are. Yeah. And he doesn't know what a plumber is.
Yeah, like they have to call those pumbles, I think, you know, the one who mend pipes and things. Plumbers, exactly. Yes, but of course they're flummoxed. I only hope we catch whoever's doing it. Will it be Aurors who catch them? Oh no, this is too trivial for Aurors. It'll be ordinary magical law enforcement. So, yeah, kind of getting...
Ahead, sorry.
No, we're just getting the sort of, like, you know, Aurors are kind of... You know, they're not normal police officers. They're like the special investigators, and things like that. So they deal with the much more serious stuff.
And I think it's like Harry keeps bringing them up because I think he's just kind of, you know, that's kind of the job he wants, right? He wants to be an Auror. So he's kind of fascinated.
As was originally suggested to him by a disguised Death Eater.
There we go. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, let's see, and Perkins shows up, Arthur's co-worker, and tells him that they've changed the time of Harry's hearing, and it's supposed to be.
they're not very nice about all of this. It reminds me of like, well, didn't you see my email? It's like, maybe I didn't yet. Like, chill. It's kind of the attitude they give him.
Yes. Basically, I'm sure this was not lost on you. This was another means to try and put Harry at a disadvantage. And clearly Fudge was hoping to basically sentence and go through with the procedure without Harry's presence.
Cool. Like, if you, I guess it's kind of like if you know you're not going to win or whatever, you may as well cheat the system as best you can, which is really low, but mm-hmm. I don't know.
So, yeah. And not only have they changed it from Amelia Bones's office down into like courtroom 10, which Mr. Weasley is very, very put off about. And we understand why, you know, a little later. And so, you know, they're going down, down, down. And this place is at the same level as a place called the Department of Mysteries.
Does Arthur doesn't know about Harry's, like, what he saw in...
I don't...
Okay.
Yeah, he doesn't know that Harry, like, knows what the room is once he sees it. Arthur knows just by reputation that what those courtrooms were used for, like, back in the olden times. So it's not that he knows Harry has a personal connection, but he's like, what the hell are we doing using those... like ominous courtrooms for such a trivial, as Dumbledore points out, such a trivial matter.
Right. Right. Okay. Okay.
Yep. And, you know, Mr. Weasley has to leave Harry and Harry has to go into the courtroom, and thus ends chapter 7.
Dun, dun, dun.
And then chapter 8, the hearing.
So yeah, he's back in the large dungeon area. And the word I was going to say, I don't remember. It was a P word. I knew that. But the pensive, what he saw in Dumbledore's pensive. And then there he is, right where he saw all these Death Eaters on trial. So I just was not sure if anybody was aware of that. Because, I mean, Dumbledore is aware, but nobody else. But either way, it's a very intimidating setup for anyone. With the chains on the chair and stuff like that.
Yeah, basically Harry's being like, what does it say that Fudge is treating Harry in like talking to Harry in the same chair that Bellatrix Lestrange was in?
Yeah, it's very like he's trying to make him nervous and trying to make a big spectacle out of something that's just rather trivial.
Mm-hmm. So, you're late. Sorry, said Harry. I didn't know the time had changed. That's not the Wizengamot's fault, said the voice. An owl was sent to you this morning. Take your seat. Which, even if Harry had gotten in it to get the owl in enough time, you know, and to get to the ministry, that would have required a magical form of transportation. And again, Arthur was, like, probably trying to avoid that.
Exactly. It just, in the moment reminded me, applying it to real life too much. But, like, I had a boss that would be always like, did you see my email? I'm like, no, I did not see your email. I have been in 5 meetings right now, and you just sent it 2 minutes ago. So, I don't know. That just kind of, like, brought that up for me.
I don't think I've had anyone be that sort of like, did you get my message? There was one professor that I was a TA for in Turkey, and it wasn't just me because like no one got the email in enough time that the professor wanted, and it was this big having to change like the nature in which we graded the students' papers. And I thought like, was there a miscommunication because I misread something in Turkish? But like, no, even the other Turkish TAs didn't know what the fuck was going on. And one girl was just like, I don't have Wi-Fi in my body.
Right, right. I know. God, some people.
As much as people want to say there are secret microchips in the vaccine.
I mean, I guess then I do have Wi-Fi.
I wish they had Wi-Fi in vaccines.
Make things a little easier, yeah.
Save on all my data on my phone.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Anyway, so we're here. There's about 50 of them. Basically, Harry's being tried by the entire court, which is not normal.
Overkill. Overkill.
Super overkill. And Fudge is there. And Fudge is... left, there's a woman wore monocle look, and then Fudge's right was another witch sitting so far back that her face was in shadows. And then finally, Liz, are you ready? How'd you feel about seeing Percy in person like this again?
Yeah, just given the tension with the Weasley family, it's a little awkward, you know. And I'm sure Harry, you know, granted, we had to like let Harry go by himself. There's still a Weasley present, which is kind of interesting, but he knows the kind of tension that's there. So
yeah, it's, you know, I'm sure Harry feels, you know, he expects, you know, a little something reassuring from Percy, but Percy's just like, nah.
Ugh. Yeah.
Yeah. And not that he was very close with Percy, but, you know, spent a good few, you know, summers and whatnot, you know, with the Weasleys. But anyway, so we've got going through, you know, Fudge's like interrogators, Cornelius Oswald Fudge, Amelia Susan Bones, head of department, magical law enforcement, Dolores Jane Umbridge, senior undersecretary to the minister. So what do you think when you heard that name for the first time showed up in print in the book?
I know this bitch is coming. So that's, I mean, and I forgot her description, you know, like I said, there are some characters I'm familiar with, some characters I'm not, just blah, blah, blah. I just know, God knows, it's probably from a BuzzFeed quiz or few, but, yeah, I was kind of like, oh, good, finally, this like big presence of a villain has shown up in an interesting way. I know she's coming to Hogwarts, so.
Yes, and so we got court scribe Percy Ignatius Weasley, witness for the defense, Albus Percival Wulfric Brian Dumbledore. So what'd you think when Dumbledore showed up?
Brian, like, okay, what the hell?
like, of all the other names?
Yes, right. Yeah, it's just that I'm sure, and I know, like, yeah. I'm always psyched to see Dumbledore, but he's been a little icy toward Harry, and he kind of continues to do that during this trial.
Yes, even though he's acting in Harry's defense, Dumbledore is not giving Harry anything to work with.
Right.
So. And, Fudge said, who looked thoroughly disconcerted. Dumbledore, yes, you got our message. I must have missed it. However, due to lucky mistake, I arrived at the ministry 3 hours early, so no harm done.
Oh my so goodness.
It makes me wonder, it would have been easy to, you know, to dismiss Harry. Like, I wonder if the whole changing the date, is it more to push out Harry or more to have prevented this very scenario of pushing out Dumbledore from making an appearance.
Dumbledore seems to be the bigger threat to Fudge. So, but like, yeah, it's kind of hard to say. Is Harry being used as just kind of like a pawn, or I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah. So basically, and again, I totally know how Harry feels. Like, you know, you're saying like, you know, people trying to box you into yes or no, you know, questions with no explanation, you know, and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. And so, yeah, he's like, you produce a Patronus, knowing you were in an area full of muggles, fully aware you're in close proximity to a muggle at the time. And then the witch on Fudge's left is like, you produced a fully fledged Patronus. She's like fangirling over like Patroni.
Right. right. Yeah, which, I mean, that was just kind of abrupt. It seems like he's just trying to get, he keeps saying yes, but, and then we're getting a little bit of like, oh, dang, you can do that? And he's like, well, yeah, I've done it a bunch of times.
Yeah, and yeah, it's just a testament to, you know, as Lupin said, like, it's not even normal for most adult wizards to be able to do this thing. So the fact that Harry can do it, particularly given his special susceptibility to the Dementors, is saying something.
Right. Yeah. Well,
and again, and Harry doesn't have other talents, but you know, I think it definitely shows, you know, there are certain areas, you know, that certain witches and wizards are good at certain branches of magic and others they're not. Like, I can make delicious cupcakes, but I always burn my cookies.
There you go. You know, every one of my favorite sayings, it's not, you know, if you're smart, it's how are you smart? So it's, everybody's got a different gift, but Harry seems to have like the creme de la creme of most gifts. So.
Yes. Anyway, because he's our protagonist and, and so finally Harry's able to like get it out. I did it because of the Dementors. Dementor, said Madame Bones, in little Wing Jing. So, as Tonks said, Amelia Bones is being the most impartial person in this courtroom. And you can tell, you know, that if Fudge could have gotten away with dealing with this without Amelia Bones, you know, on the committee or whatever in the court, he would have done so. But just her being the head, like, there's no way bureaucratically that he would have been able to push her out of this situation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good thing she was there.
Yes. And so Harry goes on to say there were two Dementors in the alleyway. And Fudge is trying to portray this as, you know, again, already building upon the fact that Harry is must be lying about Voldemort, and so now he's lying about something else.
Right, yeah. They think, like, oh, well, how would that happen? And then Dumbledore, in this kind of instance, comes to his defense, you know, because and kind of plays a little bit of, like, as Dumbledore is wont to do, a little bit of, like, okay, if, you know, did you know they're called Dumbledores now? Dementors wouldn't be released from Azkaban. And, you know, Dumbledore's like, right, that's what you're, but if you're going to say Voldemort isn't here, then that means they wouldn't be. So which is it? And he's kind of like, oh, damn. You know, yes. He gets kind of got him.
And, you know, and Dumbledore is able to produce a witness. And Fudge has blocked him, has, you know, painted himself into a corner. He obviously brought, you know, changed the date to, or changed the time. You know, he changed the place from Amelia Bones's office. Because, again, honestly, there's, for a normal, any other wizard, a kid, you know, making this sort of mistake, you know, Fudge wouldn't have even been there. Like, right. It would just be Amelia Bones dealing with this.
Sure. Right. So, yeah. He's making
so, a production. You know, so Fudge is painting himself in this corner where he wanted this spectacle and this the whole court there to humiliate Harry. But by putting the whole, making an audience for this, Dumbledore is able to force Fudge to follow due process, because it would have actually been smarter for Fudge to just do this privately. And even if it's not fair, there'd be no witnesses except Dumbledore and Harry to know that it's not fair.
Right, right. He's making a big old production out of something that is, in the end, makes him look like an idiot. So,
yeah, so Dumbledore brings along old Figgy, as Mundungus calls her.
I am a fan of Arabella Doreen Fig. She is a cat lady. She's a squib. I love her. She's the best. And I thought it was really interesting that they squib can see Dementors, but humans cannot. And like, oh, okay.
It's like, I don't know, you know. There have been lots of theories about, you know, exactly how magic works in DNA and, like, is it dominant? You know, probably it's recessive, you know, whatnot. So, like, I've always kind of considered squibs as they have a little bit of something, but it's dormant in the sense that they cannot activate, you know, activate it. They cannot use magic, but it's still sitting there where they can see the things that that muggles wouldn't be able to.
Okay. Okay.
But that's my theory. There's been lots of you know, lots of probably LeakyCon panels about such things.
Yeah, probably.
And so Mrs. Fig describes what happened, and Fudge is like, not a very convincing witness. And Madame Bones is like, oh, I don't know. She described them very accurately. And yeah, and this is where you said Dumbledore is kind of forcing Fudge to it. Either Fudge has to admit that Dementors are outside ministry control, or admit that someone internally would have, you know, ordered the Dementors there.
Right, right. Yeah, he's kind of, you know, I mean, and he makes very good points, which Fudge kind of trips Fudge up, which is good because he has a dumb case.
Yeah, so the chair recognizes Dolores Jane Umbridge, senior undersecretary to the minister, said Fudge. The witch spoke in a fluttery, girlish, high-pitched voice that took Harry aback. He had been expecting a croak. I'm sure I must have misunderstood you, Professor Dumbledore, she said, with a simper that left her big, round eyes as cold as ever. So silly of me, but it sounded for a teensy moment as though you were suggesting that the Ministry of Magic had ordered an attack on this boy.
Man, this lady. I don't like her already.
Yeah, if it is true that the Dementors are taking orders only from the Ministry of Magic, and it is also true that two Dementors attacked Harry and his cousin a week ago, then it follows logically that someone at the Ministry must have ordered the attacks. So yeah, again, like, you know, let's 1 + 1 = 2.
Right. Like which is it?
Yeah, like if you're not gonna even consider Voldemort, then all you have to do is then you have to look internally.
Yeah, the kind of didn't really think that one through, did he?
No, and it's just interesting, you know, that Fudge is so willing to take upon this opportunity of seeing Harry produce a Patronus, because the whole point of a Patronus charm is to combat Dementors. There is no other reason to conjure a Patronus. And so the very, it's not even Harry, like, did some trivial magic or even, like, cursed his, like, in a way, when Harry blew up his aunt, it made more sense why he was so afraid, because he caused harm to someone and he wasn't directly in, you know, physical danger, you know, and that. So it made sense for him to be totally freaked out about, oh my God, what's going to happen to me? I'm in deep shit. But this, it's like, you know, not only is it very advanced magic, but there's no other reason to produce a Patronus charm except against Dementors.
Right.
Yeah, it's not attacking Dudley. It's not like levitating something, and it's not doing something like banal and trivial and mundane just because he got lazy. It's, oh, Patronus. What do Patronuses do? They fight Dementors.
It just seems like the true issue is, what are Dementors doing out in the world? You know, but of course, you know, we know the reason, but every Fudge is just kind of like, oh, that's not a thing. I don't know. This is all very a former president attitude about things.
Yeah. It is not for you to decide what the Ministry of Magic does or does not do, Dumbledore, snapped Fudge, now a shade of magenta of which Uncle Vernon would have been proud. Of course it isn't, said Dumbledore. I was merely expressing my confidence that this matter will not go uninvestigated. And again, like, Fudge should have done this privately and not need the legitimacy of this stupid audience. This whole Dementor crap is on Madame Bones's radar.
Right.
Who clearly is not in Fudge's pockets. She's just doing her job.
Right. Which is what you would hope would happen in a court, but no, whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just,
oh, go ahead, sorry.
No, I'm just thinking, like, again, like, this is just such a weak argument that of course you have the right to defend yourself in a life-threatening situation. And I guess I'm just trying to think, like, how realistic was it for Fudge to think that he could just bulldoze over Harry despite this smear campaign?
Yeah, I have one of my fan fiction, well, my fan fiction question for the end of this. So I don't want to entertain it quite yet, but, okay. But yeah, very interesting.
Yeah. Yep. And then it's like, you know, he's already done, you know, misused magic at home. There was the Hoffer charm 3 years ago, and Harry's like, that's a house elf. And a house elf in a muggle house, I ask you. The house elf in question is currently in the employ of Hogwarts School. I can summon him at once if you wish to question him.
Yeah. This is just like, don't come for Dumbledore, Dumbledore's allies, because he's like, he's going to best you. Just
yeah, and Fudge is like, he blew up his aunt, for God's sake. And you very kindly did not press charges on that occasion, excepting, I presume, that even the best wizards cannot always control their emotions. Which, yeah, even Fudge was like, oh, Harry, we don't send people to Azkaban for blowing up their aunts.
Right.
Like, which back when he was happy and jovial.
Right, which would seem like the more, like, if anything's going to get him expelled from Hogwarts, it could be that. But, you know, he didn't know what the hell he was doing at that time. But this, I don't know. Obviously, Fudge has an agenda.
Yep. And so finally, they come to the vote and, you know, all in favor of clearing charges. And it is over 50%.
I'm kind of surprised it was as divided as it was. But all right.
Yep. And then those favor of conviction, like literally only half a dozen, Fudge, Umbridge, and a few others.
Interesting.
Yes. And he's like, very well, cleared of all charges. Excellent, said Dumbledore briskly. Well, I must be getting along. Good day to you all. And without looking once at Harry, he swept from the dungeon.
Yeah, strange. Icing him out here. Very strange.
What are you thinking about? How are you feeling about this? Any theories of why Dumbledore is ghosting Harry?
You know, I would like to think that there's a reason, there's a method to Dumbledore Brian Dumbledore's madness.
You can't get over Brian.
That's just so weird. So there's a reason, but do I know that reason yet? No, I'm sure that's in Harry's best interest though.
Alrighty then, so let us get in to Gothic Geek Out.
You know, I was trying to really think about like the Gothic elements of this, and nothing really stood out. I feel like in past chapters, we've had a really easy time with that, like with the Black House and all whatever. So the best Gothic-y thing that I could come up with was just the area in which the trial took place.
Courtroom 10.
Yeah, kind of dungeony and Gothic-y.
The chair has chains on it that slither like snakes.
Yeah, that's pretty intense and a little dark. So that was the best I could do.
And it's not just us as readers thinking that literally this is the like most foreboding dungeon in the Ministry of Magic, and Fudge was trying to use its Gothic ambience as a means to intimidate Harry, you know, and or like, you know, again, put on this show that we're like coming down. Even if you wanted to like have this audience, it still should have been done in a quote unquote normal courtroom. Like not this one from like, you know, the horror days of Bellatrix Lestrange and whatever.
Right. This is definitely a way to intimidate, like set up for intimidation, which is a little much. So
yeah, it's a bit excessive. And so my Gothic geek out was partially the courtroom, but partially, I don't know, just came out to be like the trope of being framed for something you didn't do, or trying to portray something that you did do like in a negative light, that, you know, Harry, you know, is having to defend himself for something that is so reasonable and logical. Like, just reminds me of maybe certain Gothic tropes where you know, a protagonist will get in a situation where, like, you know, maybe they try and save someone, but it's interpreted as trying to kill them, and like all sorts of crazy things.
The first thing that came to mind to me was Jane Eyre. I don't know why, but
why?
I'm trying to figure out why that came to mind, and maybe it was just because Mr. Rochester's, like, you know, supposed, you know, his wife is in the attic. I mean, that's not really like that's legit, but
it's not for a mean reason. It's for like doing the best he can in a really shitty situation.
Right. So, you know, I don't know why that was the first thing, but kind of motives being questioned and things like that. I don't know. That's a good one though. I like it.
Yes. And then we can move on to Tarot of the Day. The card I picked out at random is the Two of Swords.
Two of Swords.
The Two of Swords indicates that you are facing a challenging decision, but you are unclear about which option to take. Both possibilities may seem equally good or equally bad, but you are stumped about which will lead you to the best outcome. You must be able to weigh up the pros and cons of each choice and then make a conscious judgment. Use both your head, your mind, and the intellect, and your heart, your feelings, and intuition to choose the path that is most in alignment with your higher self. Which, not that Harry's in a great position, because Dumbledore is doing all the talking for him, and that was the best strategy to take, to just shut up and let Dumbledore be a badass.
Right.
But it is like when you're in these sort of like courtroom situations, you do have to genuinely assess like, okay, how much, when is it appropriate to be purely like emotionless and logical and just stick to the facts? And when is it appropriate to appeal to someone's like emotions and sensibilities, so that they empathize with the situation you're going through. And so, yeah, having to find that balance, which is, you know, it can be impossible because, again, each judge is different.
Yeah, I kind of thought about the, you know, applying this to Cornelius Fudge and the path he could have chosen, which is the path of fairness. But he's so like sideways on all of this stuff. He chose to be kind of trying to undermine things and be manipulative and weird.
If anything, again, you know, we may be stepping a little too much into fanfic territory, but already, but he could have been like, not be so gung-ho about trying to expel Harry, but just be like, oh, you did this, oh, there were demands. Like, giving a slap on the wrist, like, not giving Harry a severe punishment, but using it as ammunition to further amplify this smear campaign. Which anything, I right. think, might have been a better, like, strategy just to help sow doubt and not try to, like, eliminate Harry, you know, and right. ostracize him from this world so quickly. Like, if anything, I thought that would serve his smear campaign better.
Yeah, that's true.
That but he's have. Not patient enough for that.
No, he's not.
Yep, what else about the Two of Swords? In a reading, it might be helpful to draw two further cards, blah, blah, blah. The woman in this card wears a blindfold indicating that she cannot see the entirety of her circumstances. You may lack the information you need to make the right decisions. You may be missing something such as the threat or potential risk, alternative solutions, or critical pieces of information that would help guide you in a particular decision. Once you remove the blindfold and see the situation for what it really is, you will be in a much better position to find your best path forward. I sort of kind of apply that to Amelia Bones, where, and you know, any of the quote unquote impartial members of that court, just being like, you know, having this situation of, you know, they're clearly missing pieces of information because there's no normal context for Dementors to be in a Muggle suburb of all places.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I would agree with you there. Yeah. Good old Amelia Bones.
Yeah. And out of context. And then again, sowing doubt of if they're like, which suspicion would they go with? Like, is someone sneaky in the ministry, like, did this? Was this, like, an inside job? Or could something externally, if not Voldemort, then something else externally prompt the Dementors to do such a thing?
Yeah. I think those are all interesting positions to take. So, I don't know. Good for Amelia Bones for being fair, though.
That yeah, was nice. Amelia Bones is awesome. All righty, then. And then, well, the card I picked from my Black Moon Astrology cards is another planet card.
Cool.
I picked Pluto.
Cool.
Yeah, wait, Pluto is still a planet, yes.
I agree. No, I'm just laughing because I just, yeah, that whole thing makes me laugh.
Yeah. Well, I think, what was the whole thing? Because if you make Pluto a planet, then there was another, like, 10th planet, like, by the same criteria you needed to make Eris a planet too, or like some other bullshit. I don't remember.
I didn't follow it. I was just like, that's how I learned to play it. Excuse me.
Yeah. So, but Pluto, the smallest and outermost planet in our solar system, probably carries the most weight. It is the planet of extremes. Birth, sex, and death are Pluto's themes. You know, in Greek legend, Pluto's god of the underworld, world, blah, blah, blah. Pluto was discovered in 1930, and although it is now considered a dwarf planet, transits from Pluto are extremely powerful and bring on significant life changes. Pluto governs rebirth and renewal. It brings to the surface things that have been hidden or are felt deep inside. Let's see what it's going to get. If Pluto represents ending and beginnings, it is not a card of physical death per se. Since our life, we experience many deaths and new starts. When the Pluto card presents itself in a reading, you may have recently been infatuated with a hidden subject, certain mysteries, or the taboo. This could be a time where you're able to sense and feel spirits around you. Sometimes this card can indicate psychic attacks, and thus you should be very careful who you open up to. Be cautious if you are involved in anything paranormal or occult in nature. You are not particularly vulnerable. In fact, your strength is growing, but it is important at this point in time to spiritually protect yourself from anything negative, such as vampires, types of people, or lost spirits looking for a home.
Who?
The first thing that comes to mind is I'm thinking of Harry And then saying that, yeah, your power is growing, but still, like, be cautious of people. Like, that makes me think of, you know, Harry is growing into a powerful wizard, like, producing a Patronus charm and is able to defend himself and another person from Dementors. And that's a great feat of magic, but still socially and legally, he is so vulnerable.
Yeah, I kind of like thought about it. This feels like a very Voldemort card to me. And it's kind of like the ever-present threat and the reason for some of these things happening, like the Dementors and the endings and beginnings and hidden things, you know. I think hidden, we could talk about hidden motivations. I'm not quite clear on what, you know, Fudge's motivation is, and I don't know what Dumbledore's motivation is for being such a ice queen. King. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Think of Pluto as leftover things that tend to languish in a state of decay or decadence, but more positively, rejuvenation, healing, and birth. Well, naturally, I think, you know, it's, you know, the closing of a very scary chapter full of stakes in Harry's, like, young formative years. But I'm sure it's one, you know, just this whole experience will continue to plague and haunt his psyche because he now knows the ministry. Like, he heard it a little from Hermione, but now, even though it didn't work, and now he's seen with his own eyes what Fudge and using the power of the ministry, what he is prepared to do to discredit Harry and all of that.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree. It made me think of the Black House, or the, you know, the Order of the Phoenix, like, leftover things. And I don't know.
You need to call it's Grimold Place. You got to call it
Grimold Place. Okay.
Grimold Place. Grimold Place. Yes. Alrighty then. And then we move on to our last exercise, which we were already dipping our toes into. Fan fiction time.
I get the thing that I kind of was going to allude to and then didn't was, like, what if Dumbledore didn't show up? Like, how would that have worked out for Harry? I mean, don't know if he had to be there or not.
You know, Harry being Harry, I think eventually Harry would have gotten a word in to say that it's a Dementor attack, because, you know, and Fudge could have, you know, brushed it off, oh, some crazy story. But I think highly enough of Amelia Bones to be like, you know, Dementors, like, what are you talking about, boy? And give Harry the opportunity to, you know, explain himself. But without Dumbledore there, then Harry also would not have had the testimony of Mrs. Fig.
Right, right. Yeah, right. So it wouldn't have maybe have played out as well in his favor, but
I think it might have, like, gone to, like, a stalemate where, like, the court couldn't decide.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, you know, I mean, of course, you know, we get the weird interaction and we don't really know what his motivations are, but he obviously showed up. It's almost like he's sending Harry mixed messages. He's like, I'm here for you, but I'm not going to talk to you. Mm-hmm. So it's very strange.
Indeed. So I had a few for fan fiction times. Let me see. Where are they? Okay. What if Harry had been convicted and expelled?
Do you think he would have gone to live with Sirius? I don't know if that could have happened. I mean, that's an interesting thing, because you just kind of hope he's not going to go back to Privet Drive. But
honestly, I don't even think the Dursleys have already gotten so used to not having to deal with Harry most of the year. I'm not sure they would have even taken him during the normal school time.
Like, I guess that's one approach, to just be like, no, we won't deal with him.
We won't. So. We're not dealing with him all year. But at the same time, Vernon has shown he would prefer Harry nearby and miserable than out there in the world having fun.
Maybe Miss Fig would take him in.
Yeah. I would like to think that, because Grimold Place is the headquarters of Order of the Phoenix and would be one of the safest, most secure places in Britain, that Harry would be able to stay. Obviously, there would have to be some sort of appeal.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Like, not that Dumbledore or anyone else would just let this go, but it might have, you know, education-wise, it might have held Harry back a year.
It would just play out. It would just be a, like this boring, like what if the rest of the books were just this court battle that just went on and on and on? That would be yeah. pretty funny.
Yeah, that would suck. And again, depriving Harry of his education when he needs it most because Voldemort's going to come after him.
Right. Yeah. Interesting.
Homeschooled at Grimmauld Place by Sirius Black.
Hey, that would probably be a great education.
Okay. Alrighty then, Harry, blow it up. 3, 2, 1, go.
It'd be probably pretty fun. I mean, I'm sure, I feel like, you know, Sirius is connected enough that he would get some like after hours tutoring or something.
Yeah, I can just see like being homeschooled in the Black family library with Sirius and Lupin.
That sounds like a great time. I don't know.
Yeah. So I had another scenario of what if Dumbledore had brought Dudley as a witness?
Interesting. We've kind of talked about if Dudley was like, if Harry and Dudley were friends and maybe he exposed him to some of the magic and whatever. Wow. I can't even really fathom that. Are muggles allowed to be in those sorts of places? Is that a huge violation? I mean, I feel like that would
I think since Dudley is already a muggle that knows of magic, it's not like he has to be revealed, you know, that magic exists. You know, I think, you know, legally he could be there, you know, but yeah, what if Dudley and Dudley just described all of the horrible things and, you know.
Then we get to know.
And clearly see how traumatized. Yeah, like I feel like if Dumbledore wanted to play the empathy card than the like logical card, like Dudley would have been a good option because even if maybe Dudley couldn't wholly articulate everything, you know, concisely the way Mrs. Fig could, they could just see clearly he's been exposed to Dementors recently.
Right. Yeah. They could.
It would be more like hard evidence.
That would be, I mean, because we still don't really know what like Dudley's visions were when he encountered the Dementors. I don't know if we'll get to know that or not, but we would know that a lot faster.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then I had one more. I was just thinking in all sorts this time. What if someone else had come to defend Harry's case for him? Like McGonagall.
That's an interesting thing to think about because her maternal instincts might come out. I'm sure. I feel like she would still be very logical and use her logic to get him out of the situation. Mad-Eye, for example, I don't know if he could be there. That would be interesting.
Yeah, I feel like you see Dumbledore relying on Amelia Bones, but I feel like McGonagall would rely more on Amelia Bones even more so to be like, you're the only sane person here. I'm going to talk to you.
Yes.
Instead of having, because this, the fact that it's Dumbledore clearly shows Fudge as, you know, Fudge's, you know, issue isn't so much with Harry, it's with Dumbledore.
Right. Yeah. She's kind of owning the problem. And, you know, that I almost think it would probably undermine Dumbledore if he didn't show up, if he kind of like it looked like he sent one of his like teachers or something from Hogwarts. It would be kind of like, well, Dumbledore can't show up and deal with this. Like, it definitely carries a lot of weight when he comes up.
What if Snape came and defended Harry?
That would be very strange. Harry would probably lose his mind and be like, what the hell's going on?
And then it would make sense why Snape doesn't look at him.
Yes, yeah. Because,
like, Dumbledore is taking a page out of Snape's book when it comes to Harry.
Right. If that was happening, it would be like, well, of course. But interesting. Interesting thoughts.
Yeah. But are you glad you got your favorite old wizard?
I mean, I always love when I see Dumbledore. And I'm so glad that finally Dolores Umbridge showed up.
No, you won't be glad in a few chapters.
No, I know she's horrible, but I'm glad to finally see that where she kind of begins to play out in the series because she's such a horrible, horrible witch.
Yep. Alrighty then, and thus concludes this episode of Rambling Raven Puffs. Tune in next time where Jess and I will cover chapters 9 and 10, The Woes of Mrs. Weasley and Luna Lovegood. another great, lots of great characters emerge in book five.
Yeah. Yay.
Alrighty then. Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Rambling Raven Puffs. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophie Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophie Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophieMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophie Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophieMareStudios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophie Mare Studios podcast.